zombie. Dracula. This island Earth. Frankenstein meets Wolfman. House of Usher. The Thing. Teenage Frankenstein meets Teenage Wolfman. Walking Dead. The House on Haunted Hill. The Phantom of the Opera. Good evening!
Welcome to the Little Monsters Movie Podcast, Episode 3. I'm Dino.
And I'm Ted. Good evening, children of the night.
Yes, yes. We're going to be talking about a really cool movie today, The Island of Lost Souls, 1932 version, with Charles Laughton, Bela Lugosi, the Catwoman.
The Panther Woman.
The Panther Woman, yeah. Awesome.
Maybe first just talk about the site. How's everything been looking? We've been getting any subscribers? Or
yeah, the Facebook page is doing good. So remember, like us on Facebook. You can also like us on Twitter. We are up on iTunes. So go subscribe on iTunes. Yeah, we're everywhere. So.
All right. I'm sorry I missed episode 2. That was, what was the gentleman that you spoke with?
Richard Freeman.
Richard Freeman. He did recommend a Peter Cushing movie to me, and I will watch that soon. I have not seen that one, Island of Terror, I believe. So thank you. I'll get to it as quick as I can because I need something new when I'm not doing this.
Yes, definitely. And start right off with the movie, man.
This 1932. How awesome! You got Dracula, Frankenstein, freaks, and this like all in a space of like a year.
Oh, yes, that's awesome.
We never get that lucky.
The funny thing is, Bela Lugosi's in it for only like 5 minutes.
Right, I was going to say it's a cameo.
It's a big scene, though, when he comes up real close to that camera and does the laws.
Absolutely. So for anybody who doesn't know, Island of Lost Souls, 1932, is an adaptation of H.G. Wells' Island of Dr. Moreau, which was also made in 1977 with Burke Lancaster, Michael York. That's the one that I kind of grew up with and watched as a kid on TV. And then in 1996, they did the version with Marlon Brando, Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
And it's panned. It's pretty universally panned. There's things to like about it, but from what I understand, it was pretty troubled when it got made. So, I mean, we can touch on that towards the end, but I think out of all of them, I think Island of Lost Souls really takes the cake on this one. There's so much to like and so much subtle stuff that's underneath that I think we'll get into. But I had seen it before. You hadn't, right?
This was the first time me seeing it.
So maybe just tell us what you thought.
No disappointment whatsoever. I mean, it was a great black and white atmospheric movie from, heck, 1932. The horror movies back then were just great. And then this movie, I just love the very beginning when the boat, that you know, the ship sees the boat coming along, and they pick him up and bring him on the ship, and he realizes that there's a bunch of animals on this ship.
Yeah, isn't that cool? You know? When
and the captain was drunk for 2 days and didn't know he was.
Did you recognize that captain?
No,
he was the heavy in some of the old Laurel and Hardy movies.
Was he really?
Yeah, he's been in there. Some great fist fights when the captain knocks out, what's his name, Maling, who we later learn is the dog man in the movie.
Oh, Bling.
Was it Bling?
Bling.
Bling. He's when you first start seeing these people, you notice these people with weird features.
Yeah.
Not you look at him, he doesn't necessarily, you wouldn't say dog right away.
Right.
But what's kind of neat is he's on the ship. He's going to feed the dogs. That's his job, to feed the dogs. And the dogs are barking at everybody. And then when he comes closer, they stop. And, they kind of recognize that kinship with him. Mm-hmm. And he accidentally spills some slop on the captain's leg, and the captain just rears back and decks him. There's some awesome punches in this movie, old school punches.
Old school punches.
Knocks him right out. And that's when our guy, the hero of the story,
Parker
looks and notices the dog here, and we get a good close-up of that, and we realize,
there's
we start to realize what he's got. Kind of looks like me sometimes.
Yeah, it would take him an hour with tweezers to pull all that out.
Yeah,
it was gotta love when he knocked him out like that. That was great.
Yeah,
and then Parker stood up and he knocked him out.
Wham! some awesome punches in this movie. Oh. And, what was I getting at?
The Slap the Dog Man.
Yeah, the Slap the Dog Man. But, yeah, it just it really sets it up right away. You know, yeah. Just the
like, what are all these animals doing mm-hmm. on the ship? Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And there's Charles Laughton just eats up every scene he's in.
Yes, he was the... I mean, his character just was the greatest. Charles Laughton is such a good actor.
A perv. He's a perv.
Did you notice in the one... I mean, I'm jumping, like, a little bit into it, but... When he sits back, like the insanity on his face, mm-hmm. when he goes under the back table and just he grins mm-hmm. and smiles.
Perfect.
And because he's got Parker on the island and he yeah. plans on just keeping him there and right. of course mating him with the Panther Woman.
Absolutely. So what happens, folks, is our hero Parker, he's shipwrecked. He gets picked up by a commercial vessel called the Kavina, who is transporting goods and animals to Dr. Moreau's island. Dr. Moreau's assistant, Dr. Montgomery,
yeah.
is on the ship with him, and he kind of nurses Parker back to health. Doesn't really explain anything that's going on. The captain of the Kavina just dumps him on Moreau's ship. The part where he picks him up and throws him.
Well, he punches him twice yeah. and then there.
And then...
There's two quick punches. Boom, boom.
I mean, it looked like one of the old Three Stooges, the mannequin dummy being thrown.
Right. If he actually fell off onto that boat, he would be injured pretty darn bad. But he got up and he was fine.
So he's trapped on the ship with Dr. Moreau and taken back to Moreau's Island under the pretense that Dr. Moreau the next day is going to provide him with a schooner to get to the island that he needs to go to, where his fiance is waiting for him.
Ruth, yeah.
And I believe in the book, I started reading the book again recently, but I hadn't read it since maybe high school, which was, okay, folks, it was like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't believe there was a female character or, you know, Ruth. There was no Ruth character in the book there wasn't? No, that was put in there, I think, just for the Hollywood thing, but... It's just kind of cool when they do get on Moreau's boat. That's where Parker starts seeing a little bit more of these animal men, the ape man especially.
Yeah, like why are all these hairless?
What was his name? Arunga or something like that. The ape one, the one that you're always seeing leering.
Yeah,
at the female characters.
Yeah, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, and then just like, you know, when the boat's coming into the island, like you know, you could just see the shadows of the other ones waiting in the little cave there watching them come.
How they lumber around like ape.
And what's cool is they're always in the background, like, you know, up in the trees.
Oh, yeah.
You watch the movie, you're watching what's going on in the foreground, but you see one in the back just kind of leering around.
Yeah.
And, you know... So, if you're familiar with the island of Dr. Moreau, Dr. Moreau is performing experiments on animals to bring out the human in them. So, he's left with an island full of beasts that are sort of half human, half monster, and the story kind of deals with, you know, just the right and wrong of that, nature run amok,
right.
And which we'll kind of get into. I don't want to just, you know, spoil the whole movie and tell you everything that happens in it. But if you're familiar with the story of Dr. Moreau, this is a really great movie to seek out. If anything, for this awesome, awesome makeup effects in it,
mm-hmm.
and Charles Laughton, especially.
Charles Laughton, yeah.
And each version of the movie... All three have some sort of Panther Woman in them. I think the one we've got here is the best looking one. And the one that...
I was going to say that. I mean, she's typical, you know...
But there's even things about her. Like, there's some scenes where she acts more skittish, like a cat would.
Yeah.
And there's just things in this movie that, you know, the more you watch it, you'll see some more things. So that's what I really like about it. But I guess my main question that we can touch on for a minute is, why isn't this more popular? I never saw this as a kid. I only heard of it maybe a few years ago, and Turner Classic showed it. I mean, now I think it's a little more respected. It just came out on Blu-ray, Criterion Collection, which I have. But it seems like, you know, monster movie fans really dig this movie.
Oh,
but I
yeah.
had never heard of it. I had never watched
it. I watched it for the first time. So, yeah, I mean, I had no idea about this. I just knew about the later versions.
Mm-hmm.
And... This, yeah, I mean, well, we know that I like the old black and white anyways,
yeah.
but, yeah, the acting for back then is just great. I mean, you gotta love all these monsters on this island that are just, like you said, leering out of the bushes.
Right,
the
most, tree. Of them, most of them don't have, I think only three of them have dialogue.
Right.
It just.
Bela Lugosi's one of them.
Right. Baling and Orunga, I think, are the only ones that really have, like, any dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But just. You know, and even if you can go online and look at stills from the movie that really appreciate the makeup, there's ones that I've seen pictures of that I can't find in the movie. Like, there's one that almost looks like half of an owl and a man, and you know, there's ones that have hoofs for feet, and, I mean,
I would love to have a lot of the movie stills and pictures from the movie and stuff, so.
From what I understand, it was, you know, banned in England. This was before the motion picture code. It really touches on
pre-code, that's all right.
It touches on, I mean, I don't know a movie before this that talks openly about vivisection. It actually uses the word. There's definitely some subtle sexual things going on in this movie. And then just the disturbing nature of what's going on anyway. And I'm sure for a lot of people this is pretty tame. You watch this and go, okay, what's the big deal? But I don't watch movies that way. And, you know, I just watch it for what it is and what it deals with and how it dealt with it at the time.
Right.
And so this is 1932, and they're dealing with subjects that I haven't seen in a motion picture from this period. And I'm just very interested in how they subtly do it, especially when we are introduced to Lota, the Panther Woman, who Charles Laughton, it's his success, I guess you could say, his almost perfect success. This is
bringing out the human and the animal. Yeah.
This was a panther. Who, I don't know if they ever actually say the word panther, but it's in the movie poster.
Did, but yeah,
and he's just such a sick freak. He brings Parker to the island, and just to see if, you know, she is capable of being attracted to him.
Yes, loving him and showing some affection.
Right, and I don't think she ever. She does show affection. I don't know if that ever qualifies as love. It's more like, you know, maybe an animal kind of bonding thing.
When they layer it too.
Yeah. sorry, guys. We're kind of looking at the flick a little bit here and there, but So, and he puts the two of them together alone in a room, and you know, most of the time he's just standing back, leering, spying. he actually really wants to know if she can get impregnated by him, like if a human can impregnate her.
Nope.
And he or Montgomery surely could have done this if they wanted to. He states in the movie
that she just detests them,
right?
And she's scared of them. Right.
But if they really wanted to conduct this experiment, they could have.
Yeah, they're the only ones on the island, so.
Right? So I don't know. There's part of that sick little Jeffrey Beaumont from Blue Velvet kind of thing where he just likes to stand and watch, and that's kind of sick and freaky there too.
The perv in the background.
Absolutely.
Looking at the,
And then, you know, Parker shortly, you know, after he meets Lode, starts hearing screams coming from the House of Pain.
Right, the House of Pain.
Which is where the House of Pain is so. It's
just
where,
the wording alone, the House of Pain for 1932 is just.
It's where he does his experiments. In, I believe in the book and in this version of the film. We're led to believe that he does all of this surgically. I don't know how you can take a panther and surgically make it look like Lota from the movie.
Right.
But
well, later in the movie, which isn't really giving anything away, he when things start going down, which we'll talk a little bit more, the human side of her starts going away again.
Right.
Due to the animal coming back. So,
which is, I think, why all the others were failures, you know. Right.
Right.
And
but that's jumping a little bit ahead.
Right.
So, yeah.
So Parker witnesses a vivisection going on right there on the table. I mean, it's not gory, but you know, sometimes what's not shown is more frightening. You just hear this beast howling in pain, and
you can see the hairy figure on the table, turning his head and screaming.
So this is all being done with no anesthesia. He's getting off on this. He loves doing. He's a masochist. He's a sadist, and he's brilliant.
The thing about this too is, like, this is right when the talkies started coming out, you know, I mean, a lot of movies started, you know, pouring
right,
out.
Right, Dracula was an early talkie,
but
so
the faces and the expressions they put on themselves is just, that's what makes the movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the movies of the 1930s so great. These right. actors coming out of the silent movie era.
Right, you had to exaggerate your movements a little bit and your expressions because you didn't use words, and that was a whole school of
right.
acting. And that's why a lot of people watch those old movies and go, ah, they're so stiff and everything. People don't understand. That's what you had. That's just how they learned to act. You had to exaggerate the movements and the gestures.
Right. For the right. silent movie.
And then,
yeah.
you know, William Shatner just kept doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But once Parker realizes what's going down on this island,
mm-hmm.
he puts two and two together, realizes what these creatures he's been seeing on the island are, what they're a result of, does not figure that Lota is one of them yet. He thinks she's just an islander.
Yeah.
Or what he said, full
Polynesian. Yeah.
Right. And so they try to escape. In pursuit of them is this lumbering ape man.
And you gotta love the shadows in the movie, too.
Yes.
The lumbering ape man. Is,
mm-hmm.
You see his shadow in the background. And
absolutely.
It's going back and forth. But I mean, just, yeah, the imagery in this movie is great.
And as they are running through the jungle, they come to a compound or a village. And this is where all of these sad creatures live. And
they're commune, yeah.
Yeah, and they... at first, you know, they're all kind of amazed to see, you know, the another man with five fingers. And
they're also amazed at the female, the panther woman.
Right. I don't think many of them have seen her.
Right.
Right. Maybe the ones who lived in the house. And this is where we first see Bela Lugosi. He plays a character called Sayer of the Law, which is the character in the book. And he
yes.
is... he's kind of like the religious figure among them. In that, if Dr. Moreau is like God... You know, Sayer of the Law is kind of just like his acolyte, his disciple, who tries to keep the others in line.
Right.
And while in the village, Moreau catches up with Parker and Lota, and I love it. He's got he bangs a gong. All the animals just immediately stop what they're doing.
Yes.
And
he is God.
Right.
In their eyes.
And he states, you know, what is the law? And Sayer of the Law recites the law.
Yep. You know, not to run on all fours.
And what is the law not to eat meat? And
what is the law not to spill blood?
Not to spill blood.
Yes.
And this has been ingrained in them. It's almost a religion. That's definitely a
and he ends it with what? I mean, his is the hand that heals.
His is the hand that makes. His is the hand that heals.
His is
the house of pain.
So that's all just...
It's been ingrained in
ingrained
them.
In their head, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, and just to go off subject a little bit, like with the 1977 version, same thing,
mm-hmm.
but a little bit sooner in the film that the beasts kill Dr. Moreau. That's not supposed to be a spoiler. This book was written like 100 years ago, so
right.
if you hadn't read it, it's not my fault.
And it won't ruin a movie. It won't ruin a movie.
Right, you can kind of tell where it's going.
Yeah.
But they kill him a little bit sooner. Actually, in both the other versions of the movies, but in the 1977 one, they still use his body. They prop it up on the gate, and they the Parker character in the film. I don't believe his name is Parker in the movie. They always change the name in every film.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's a different name in every. I can't remember which one the Michael York one
that's
was.
Right, yeah.
But you know, they try to say that he's risen. That, you know, I mean, it's just all this religious stuff. You know, he's risen. It's almost like trying to create a new gospel of Dr. Moreau. That doesn't happen in this one, but there's definitely the religious motifs in it. When, I mean, even Charles Lawton says, you know, have you ever known what it feels like to be God? And he shows Parker, you know, his failures. Do you remember the part? And they're, like, churning this big wheel. They're slaves.
Right.
They're his absolute failures.
The very first ones that he tried to...
And these poor creatures are just turning this big water mill.
Turning into slaves.
And that turbine, whatever it is. To
lowest on the totem pole.
And that's, I mean, absolutely no care for any of these.
No.
You know, states that he started with plants.
It's all science to him. It's, you know.
Right, even when...
He thinks he's doing something great for humanity, which I don't know how turning animals into humans
right.
is, you know, so great for...
Well, I think his point was that, you know, it's like he's trying to speed up evolution. After he rescues Parker and Loda from the village, and after, you know, the Sayer of the Lost scene, he brings them back, and he's saying, you know, I started on plants, and, you know, here's this.
A six-foot-tall asparagus plant.
Yeah. And he literally takes
how long it would take you to eat that thing?
I don't like asparagus. Wouldn't take me no time. But he literally then takes him into the House of Pain to show him. Mm-hmm. But before that, which I think is a great part, when, you know, Parker is scared to death, he wants to get himself and Loda off this island, and Moreau gives him his gun. He's like, here, yeah. I'm unarmed. Right. You take it. And, you know, I mean, he's smooth, he's slick, he knows what he wants to do with this guy, and he's just setting him up to be calm and to keep him there a little bit longer. He's already being protective of Loda, so it's only a matter of time before he feels that, you know, they can engage in some kind of relationship. And I gotta say, Charles Laughton is just, he's just cracking with that whip.
Oh.
What? He never misses. You're knocking an apple off your head.
Yeah, he was pretty darn good with that whip. Yeah.
He's always carrying it. And it's like the only thing he needs. It's the only thing in this movie that he really uses.
He doesn't need the gun.
He carries it, but he never whips it out or anything.
It's the whip.
I mean, it's just keeping these mangy animals in line. But getting back to where they, you know, enter into the House of Pain, he starts to explain to him what he's doing and how he's doing it. And while he's doing it, you just hear this moaning and groaning. Yes. And there's just this beast laying on the table.
it's all for science.
It's all for science. And he just treats it like a piece of meat. Grabs the jaw, moves it around. And
hopefully he looks down the throat. I don't know, man.
So, definitely, you know, like I understand it was banned in a couple of countries. Mm-hmm. It was cut. I think even until recently, we've got the whole thing now that Criterion put the Blu-ray out. But
I'd be curious what was cut out.
Maybe the very end. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up. But I know we have listeners in England now. So from what I understand, the movie was a little hard to come by for a while when it first came out.
Yeah. The scene where he lays up on that table and just gives that grin when they're in the House of Pain,
exactly,
looking at Parker and just that
he just kind of lays back, grin like he's all that.
Oh, yes, I'm God. This is my realm. But go ahead. Yeah.
And I think this was also a film like, say, maybe like in Australia, for instance. Mm-hmm. It had special ratings where they would not show it to native peoples. They thought it would be offensive to natives.
That makes sense.
Any kind of Polynesian type people or native islanders. Yeah. They didn't want to show this film to. So...
Yeah, it was the beginning of the Hollywood era there, so... Mm-hmm.
And I understand H.G. Wells did not like this. He was alive when this came out, mm-hmm. and he did not care for it. Some authors are like that. They don't like any of their works translated, and... Not
understandably.
You know, not many. I mean, I love, you know, the H.G. Wells movies, you know, Time Machine from 1960, and The Invisible
Man.
That's
what we got to do, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually here. Time Machine's a great movie, too.
Right. I know when the remake one came out in the theaters ages ago, you and I went to go see that.
Yeah.
And that was actually directed by maybe his grandson or great-grandson.
Okay.
It was a relative of his that made it, but it just didn't touch the Rod Taylor one, in my opinion.
Oh.
Flashier effects, maybe, but...
Yeah. The thing is, just...
It didn't have Wilbur Post for Mr. Ed in it. And that was,
you know, so. Mr. Ed. Yeah. It's just the old movies. Even like we said, The Time Machine. I mean, it's you're going back to a different era. So I think that is what adds to some of the movie character.
I think except for music, I was just born at the wrong time.
Well, hey, who knows 50 years from now when we're looking at the movies nowadays? Mm-hmm. Well, not us. I mean, probably if we're 100 years old going on, whatever. But anyways, they might be looking back saying, oh, look at the atmosphere to these movies and stuff like that.
They'll be stupid people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, beginning of Hollywood, it should still be, 100 years from now, still the greatest. I mean, come on.
It is. Yeah. It was new. It was fresh. Horror movies, when this was starting to come out, horror movies was something... I mean, there were some great silent ones, Nosferatu and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
Others like that, especially like the German Expressionists, they had it going. Mm-hmm. A couple of great films there.
Yeah.
But for talky horror kind of movies, know, this was new. Dracula was kind of like the first one, and that ushered in a whole, you know, every studio. This one, Island of Dr. Moreau, this version was from Paramount. Paramount originally produced this picture.
Yeah.
And everybody was kind of jumping on the bandwagon. Everybody wanted their horror picture. Mm-hmm. They realized that these were moneymakers. And this is not a cheap movie. I don't know how much went into making this, but these makeup effects couldn't have been cheap.
No, for back then, mm-hmm. yeah, they had to spend a pretty penny for the movie.
And Bela Lugosi was, you know, coming up as a big star after Dracula.
Yeah.
We all know he turned down Frankenstein because of the makeup. And yep. then he takes this movie.
with makeup and hair.
Where he's completely unrecognizable physically.
And you know, even when he does talk in this movie, mm-hmm. he's still got that Romanian accent.
Oh, yeah, well, that's his thing.
I mean, yeah, they never going to go thing. Away, but just a couple of lines, but he's still
got
there.
He's got a pained voice. I listen to it, and like when he says the laws, and he says, his is the house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was great.
You hear it deep down.
Yes.
And, you know, as the picture goes on, his Parker's fiance manages to find out where he is.
Yeah, because he was originally going to let him off the island in the morning, they go to the beach early that morning,
and the ship's burning down. Yeah, it's all torn apart, which was what Moreau's plan was. I think he even says, you know, wouldn't it be interesting, Montgomery, if he didn't leave in the morning?
Yeah,
and you already know the boat's already been destroyed.
Of course, all his. Slaves out
right, and it's all just a setup. You know, as soon as he laid eyes on him, he realized what he could use him for. Yeah. And again, like I said, he's a perv. He likes to just watch.
Yeah, he's got a god complex, man. He's got an island full of who knows how many.
And it almost seems like the Montgomery character in this version really doesn't like what's going on.
Not too much.
He assists, but he really seems. Yeah, you know, that he's really against.
He plays it good, though. Like, mm-hmm. This is your business, you know.
Right.
I understand, I'll be fine with it, but, mm-hmm. yeah.
But, he, you know, you can tell he's turned to alcohol. They make several comments about him drinking. He's not drunk, but it looks like he's just a functioning alcoholic.
Right, Montgomery, yeah.
In the 1977 version, Montgomery is kind of the same way. Also turns to alcohol to mm-hmm. deal with what they're doing, to deal with his own demons about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I also get the feeling that he didn't care for it too much. Now, in the 1996 version, Val Kilmer, he's smoking dope, and he seems to really get off on it, too. Like, he likes it, too.
Yeah.
He almost has the same kind of attitude that, you know, not really showing much in the way of emotion towards them.
Yeah.
And I guess I just have to say, you know, if you watch the other versions, the makeup effects, you can see how the improvements came as far as
and the other versions. The other versions, do they have like a Panther Woman?
Yes, all three of them do.
They do have that. Yeah,
in the 1977 version, which again, I don't think the other two versions are good enough to like devote a whole hour to.
Right. Yeah.
That's why we just mentioned them in passing here. The 77 version is pretty cool. It's the one I was used to, but now that I've seen this, I think I would just always watch this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. Do you remember Barbara Carrera? She was an actress back then.
I don't remember.
If you saw a picture of her, you'd remember. She was in a lot of miniseries and things mm-hmm. that you probably grew up with in the
70s. Yeah.
And she plays, I don't know if the name was Loda, but she plays the Panther Woman in that one. And in that film, these changes aren't brought about by surgery, they're brought about more like by a serum. Dr. Moreau studies eugenics and genes.
Yeah,
he's doing therapy. Which,
that's what I thought,
in today's day and age, if they were to make this now, make a new version of it, I think that's definitely the way they would go. And it makes more sense.
Exactly, yeah.
And he eventually even gives the Parker character the serum, trying to turn him into an animal, to see if he could take a man and turn him into an animal.
Okay.
And he does not succeed. By the end of the film, when everything goes to pot, you know, he and the Loda character on a boat, and the serum's wearing off on him. If you don't get the injections daily or whatever it was, I know in the 96 version it was like daily. If they didn't get the injections, they would revert back.
Yeah, so you definitely have to be on the needle for
right.
every day for
yes.
the rest of your life.
So he's kind of cured, but then you get a little glimpse of the Loda character. She's starting to revert back
yeah.
as the rescue boat's coming to get them, and you know he realizes what she's going to turn into. Yeah.
And getting back to that with the original movie here, 1932.
Right.
When he does come back and realizes he's not getting off this island, he finds that book to try to put together a transmitter.
Right, a radio.
Yeah, to
Loda
call
makes
for help.
Short work of that, doesn't she?
Well, yeah, she comes up and tries mm-hmm. to, you know, give him a kiss. And well, actually, no.
She kind of just rubs up into him.
Yeah, and his
almost
male,
like she wants to be pet.
Right, right.
You know, like a cat.
Like a little cat.
Yeah.
And his male instincts kick in, and he turns around and just kisses her.
Gives her
like,
a big smooch.
And then he pushes her away like, oh my God, well, the claw is going to his
right.
back.
He notices.
Because she is reverting
he
back.
He notices her fingers are getting more claw-like, like a cat's. And
that's when he got like horrified and
right.
like, ran away.
And that's another cool thing about this movie. He runs up into Moreau's room and says, you know, I could have forgiven you for, or I could have overlooked all the other animals, but her. You know, and that's because
and he's just so his sarcastic ways are still there too. He's making
oh.
that tea.
Oh yeah,
and just like oh,
you
no bother.
Tea.
Yeah, you but have no choice in anything. So yeah,
the Parker's character is he's horrified for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, you know, he was
stuck on the island.
Well, he was unfaithful to his fiance,
right.
But. He became attracted to a woman who's not a woman, but an animal.
Right.
And once he kisses her and looks at the nails and realizes what he
very
did.
Very beautiful woman, except
right.
for the long nails.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know,
but he realizes what she
nails,
is, that she's not a woman.
Right.
And so he marches right up there and lets him have it. Another great punch scene. He knocks him out, and Charles Long goes flying onto the table there.
He but, doesn't even care that he gets hit.
No!
Right? He's
no,
like, no, it's all right.
Knocks the entire table over, teapots everywhere. And ain't no thing. He's still talking. But
you got to love that.
You know,
yeah.
It's just that subtle thing there. You know, that little bestiality kind of thing there. You know, all these other tortured souls, and it's this one because he was attracted to it.
Yes.
And that's what really gets him there. So that's another little thing that's kind of, you know, under the surface and freaky and uncomfortable about this movie in places.
Yeah, if passing, it's just a movie, you
mm-hmm.
know. But if you dive deeper into it, yeah, you, all
yeah,
these aspects
more.
Of the movie is very deep when you think about it.
Right,
Moreau's
taking a look at those claws, and he finally says, you know, we'll burn it out next time.
Ugh.
You know, he's going to take her to the House,
House
of Pain.
House of Pain and burn it out.
Burn
yeah.
it out of her.
And I don't think they ever did show exactly how they did that, did they?
He doesn't take her to the House of Pain. Things start going to pot shortly thereafter, but because Ruth shows up with that captain,
right?
And you know, everything just starts going into a tailspin down. It almost looks like before these other characters showed up, everything was kind of peachy keen on the island. Like
oh,
I think
yeah,
everything would have been okay.
Yeah.
But the introduction of this Parker character just sets
that darn captain knocking him in that boat.
It just sets things in motion that
and if he would have let it just
destroys
let,
the harmony.
Let him go the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not worry about. But he really was interested
right.
in getting this woman,
and it just really touches on you know the, nature's balance. Just because we can do a thing, should we do a thing?
Yeah.
And that's what's cool about this story in general. You can take this book and put it into a total modern contemporary.
They did it four times. I mean,
three at least. Unless they did a silent version that you folks know about that I don't know about. As far as I know, Island of Lost Souls is the first one. But, you know, you can easily take, you know, H.G. Wells' stories and bring them to a contemporary setting. And they still make sense, and that's why he was so ahead of his time.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on H.G. Wells. I like what I've read. He didn't write many science fiction stories. He wrote a handful of them, but he wrote a lot of other stuff, too. He's written a lot of books, and he's mostly known for his science fiction stories.
What's the name of the one again?
There's another
the hairless
character.
One.
Now, yeah, there is the
he
hairless
looks like
one.
He looks like the pig man from Seinfeld episode.
Remember
yes. when Kramer said there's a pig man here? He looks exactly like that.
Yeah, folks.
If you've ever seen Seinfeld.
There is a skinless, and I don't know what animal he's derived from,
yeah,
but I think he has lines too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we're kind of...
He's like the butler type.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, or the gardener.
Yeah.
And so Ruth and this captain, they get to the island, and of course Ape-Man is lurking in the caves. They make their way to Moreau's castle. Because
they see this beautiful blonde-haired woman.
Yeah,
come,
yeah.
I mean,
and that's what...
Don't ask me how all these hundreds of monster creatures didn't get to her, but anyways...
Right? No. And, you know, the leering of this Ape-Man one, I mean, we get to a point later on in the film where Moreau just wants to be rid of the captain.
This is where the creature parts come into the two monsters, and they do act like apes, and you can actually hear them going...
Right.
You know, making that ape sound.
Yeah, we're kind of watching the film a little bit as we talk, just to remind us. We're not commentating on the film as we go, just to kind of remind us the order of events in it. I've watched this movie twice in 1 week. I read a little bit about it on the internet just for some of the extra scenes and stuff. Like the director, I mean, it's a great directing job.
Oh, yeah.
And the man who directed it, Earl Kenton, I believe.
Okay.
He didn't really direct very many other films. He did a couple other Universal monster movie ones, some of the later ones.
Okay.
But from what I understand, most of the other stuff he did was kind of just hack work. But really? You had this one
great
film. You got
lucky on
film.
This one great, yeah.
You know, he probably had a good budget, good actors, and a great story, a great script. And, you know, it just... What's cool about these, even though it's 70 minutes, it's short, it's a tight 70 minutes, cuts out anything superfluous, gets right to the story.
Yeah.
And... Now, that's the thing about a lot of these monster movies. They weren't long. You just get right to the story.
Yeah. No, no fill.
No.
Not
no deleted scenes. And getting back to the Ape Man, Arunga, I believe his name was. Every time there's a female character in the film, you just see him in the background leering, lustful.
Creeps up.
And it's uncomfortable. Yes. And I guess I could see how in 32, when movies were new and people were just getting into these horror movies, these were, you know, they try to say online that people vomited in the theater when this movie came out and things like
that.
But they always want to say that about sensational.
Yeah.
But this film, I guess, had a reputation. Maybe that's why it's not as popular as some of the other monster movies. I mean, there's a reason why we never saw this movie, really, as a kid.
And a lot of these older movies are just being revived again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're bringing them back. And
right, and Criterion obviously thought it was worthy enough to put in the collection. I'm not a huge Criterion fan, but, you know, when they put out a film I like, I support it and pick it up. And, you know, they pulled out all the stops on us. There's a lot of cool extras and interviews with monster movie makeup people and things like that. So, you know, it's informative in that way, and it filled me in on a little bit of things that I didn't know about the picture.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it with any commentary yet, but I rarely do that when I watch a movie.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah, maybe just to learn something that I didn't know.
You gotta love Dr. Moreau's mustache goatee, however.
He's so smooth.
It's like an anchor.
Mm-hmm.
It
does, folks.
Chin.
It does. It looks like an anchor right below his bottom lip.
Yeah.
And so Ruth and the captain, they show up to the house, and Dr. Moreau makes like he's, you know, he's the big host, and he's going to invite them to dinner, and even talks them into... Parker's wanting to leave right now. He's like, let me get my things, we're going.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says, oh, it's getting dark out in the jungle, you got to walk a mile in the jungle, and...
It'll take forever to get
there. Yeah, it'll take you forever to get to the boat, so why don't you just stay the night? And that
very,
woman,
they're very rowdy out there.
Yeah, and that Ruth of his, she talks him into staying the night. He should have known better.
Yeah,
and then I love how they take separate rooms. And I'm thinking, yeah, I wouldn't let my fiancé sleep in a separate room.
He'd stay right here with me.
I mean, the smart thing is he stays awake, and he's got the gun, and he's up in a chair.
Yeah, it's right outside the
door. When she screams, he's right there.
Yeah.
Because, sure enough, who tries to bust his way in
through the window?
The ape man starts busting in through the window.
Oh, he tore the metal
pipe. He pulls the bars out of the window.
Out of the cement,
I'm going to get some.
He's like, woman.
And, you know, it's like almost a little priest cursor to... Kong,
yeah,
you know, the ape man, the blonde woman,
you know what, exactly,
you know, there's a little bit of something there.
Yep,
you know, little things that you can put together when you're a fan of these old movies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
you wonder if they took that for the King Kong movie. Let's have that ape peer in, even though
I'm sure they saw this movie. And they probably went more for a blonde in Kong, just because I don't think Fay Wray wasn't a natural blonde. That was fake hair. She was a brunette, I believe. Because in Most Dangerous Game, which they were filmed at the same time as Kong, she's got dark hair. So I think it was a wig that she wore. I think. But I'm sure, you know, there weren't as many movies out then as there are now, so I'm sure the makers saw this, but, yeah. You know, Kong's a different star. I mean, that's one of my loves. It's the original Kong. And, I mean, I guess I could say I like every version of Kong, but, you know, I only own the original, and,
yeah.
You know, if I really want to watch one, my kids have only seen that one. So
you like Son of Kong, right?
Well,
not as much?
Yeah. You know, I mean,
I know it was different.
I recognize it as a cheap cash. And, you know, one of my best memories are. And
that was a good movie, though. I love how they hiding him out in the back of the truck.
Yes.
And the military truck driving him down the road and stuff. But
one of my best memories, and you probably remember this too, on Thanksgiving. It was my favorite channel, folks, WUAB, TV 43. They would always show Thanksgiving afternoon. They would start with King Kong. Mm-hmm. Then you'd have Son of Kong. And then they would usually show Mighty Joe Young, which was Ray Harryhausen's, I believe, his first one, where he was the master of effects.
Mighty Joe Young, yes.
And, you know, on Thanksgiving afternoon, you know, you got to watch all three of those every year. And that was the thing. You know, you didn't have I didn't have a VCR until the 80s, mid-80s. And I didn't have cable. And if you had, you know, when you wanted to watch these movies, you had to be home. You know, and you know, like Wizard of Oz and King Kong and things like that. They were on once a year.
Well, that's when you had to, yeah, you sat at the TV,
right.
You waited for it, you looked through the TV guide.
Exactly.
You know?
Except my folks used to comment that I memorized the TV guides. I didn't memorize the TV guide. I memorized what I wanted to watch.
Right.
So, and, you know, you had to be there. You never got
so
to
different.
I know, yeah, you never, geez. You know, my kids ate the DVR. And,
I remember coming off the bus, rushing to the TV to watch The Little Rascals,
right? Or your cartoons, you whatever know, show you liked.
Oh.
Kind of like what our parents did with Dark Shadows after school. You know, I always hear parents saying that they had to run home because it was on at 4 o'clock and they had to get home. And I can sympathize with that.
Yeah, you didn't want to miss it. You could, otherwise, you're not going to see it again.
Kong was on once a year. If you didn't watch it, no other station showed it. That was it.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't eat Thanksgiving dinner until I had watched King Kong. The other two, I'd probably catch in bits and pieces. I've seen them all since, of course. Yeah. Mighty Joe Young, I have a new appreciation for. Just because I hadn't seen it recently.
Yeah.
And I did watch it very recently. It's so good. But we are totally digressing off the subject. But getting to the point that, you know, we didn't see films like this on TV. You know, you would see the old monster movies on the late night TVs or around Halloween time. This was not one that they showed. It is a little bit more disturbing in some ways. A little more graphic with the makeup. I mean, you watch this in a dark room, I don't care who you are.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I mean, this is a movie you... I mean, it is up on YouTube, but you sit down in a dark room, maybe bedtime.
Yes.
Put the headphones in your iPad and watch it, and it's just...
Which is how I watched it the second time this week.
Great atmosphere.
I watched the Blu-ray the day after our first show, just to be ready, and then I watched it last night on the iPad, or actually on my iPhone, which is a horrible way to watch a movie. But
a little too small of a screen for me. But
my kids take over the iPad. So,
but yeah, back to where were we in the movie?
They're sleeping there for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth's sleeping in her own room. Ape Man is climbing up the tree outside.
Tears out the bars and layers on it.
Looks in there. I mean, he's licking his chops. He's getting, and then, like a madman, he just starts ripping the bars out.
With all that chest hair,
yes.
Because he's
part and ape. And I don't know where they found some of these people. I mean. You know, I don't know how they built the makeup up on them like that. I'm sure there were just a lot of extras that they could just slap makeup on.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not like Freaks,
right? Which it's not like Freaks, but
right? Which we could do.
Oh, we definitely should do that. That's a good one too.
Yeah, because not only talking about the film, we could talk about those actual people.
But I know what you mean. That the structure of their face alone was they must have cast the roles.
Yeah, they probably looked for these big lumbering people in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
So. He's ripping through the bars. She screams. Parker comes in. He can't even get the door open because she locked it. So he takes his pistol and sticks.
I'm going to lock my husband out from the room.
There's like a little barred window, and he sticks his pistol in there and shoots at him. I don't know if he hits him or not. Ape Man kind of falls down.
Yeah,
you know, wakes up the whole house, and they realize it's time to
It's kind of Moreau still in the corner, though. Like,
I'm still not worried about anything.
Right. Even though everything's crumbling in front of my eyes.
Even though, you know, Montgomery's the same thing. I'm out of here. I'm done with you. I'm done with what you're doing. Yeah. I'm getting these people and this them off this island.
Yep.
So they're going to make their way through the jungle at night to try to make their escape.
Yeah.
And that's with Montgomery in tow. They also decide to grab Loda at the last minute there, too, to make their escape, the four of them, to escape from Dr. Moreau's island.
Mm-hmm.
The captain of the schooner that brought them there, he goes on ahead.
He's the first one to run?
He's the first one to get through the jungle.
That's right.
He doesn't make it too far because Moreau instructs him. Do you remember? He says, follow him, put your hands on his throat.
That's right, yes.
And the ape man says, the law. And he says, it'll be all right. So he's telling him to go and break the law,
against
everything that he's been conditioned to do.
Yes.
And to
God is breaking the rule.
Right. And to go and go against all his conditioning and training, to go against the law. And he does that with glee. You know, he doesn't even hold back. He kills the guy.
And he does it in front of all these other monsters.
Yeah, drags the body back. And, of course, Sayer of the Law comes out there. You know, you have spilled blood. And Oronga, you know, he tell me spill blood. Yes. And, you know, law no more. Law no more. And that's all it takes. Oh. It doesn't take much. I think even Sayer of the Law, which I think in the other versions he's desperately clings on to that religion that they've been instilled with. But the rest of them, they just go bonkers.
Oh, yeah, it's just that's all it took was for them to kill one.
Now, in this one, I think Sayer the Law goes along with it, too. You know, law no more. You know, he tells them stop there for a second, but it don't take long.
They're crazed. Almost like a scene out of the Planet of the Apes when, Caesar takes them...
Conquest, yes.
After it's the...
total revolt.
Humans, yeah.
And... So Parker and Montgomery and Ruth and they're going to get Loda. They're getting ready to leave. And Moreau's just standing outside the gate listening.
Smiling, too.
Smiling. No, yeah, exactly. Knows what's going on.
Oh, he's...
You know, he's telling him, lock the gate if you're afraid. You know, I mean, even at this point when they're all going crazy, you know, and they're smelling that blood.
Yeah.
And so they're going to get that bloodlust going. Yeah. And that's partially what happens. You know, they even say, you know, he can... You know, it's like they were under the impression that, you know, a five-fingered man, they can't die. They're like God.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, so, you know, he die, so, he, you know, pointing up at the house, so he can die.
Yeah.
And they cause
them way too much pain.
Right. So,
I like how Bling's layering out of the bushes.
He's the loyal dog, as they call him.
He's still just peering, just watching what's going on.
Right. He's in the shadows of the jungle, watching the scene unfold. The
almost like, oh my god, what's going on?
The beasts completely burn their village.
Yeah.
And Bling, is it Mulling or Bling? I think
it's Bling.
Bling. I can't ever.
I'm pretty sure they pronounce it Bling every time. And
something
close
like
enough.
That. But the dog man, who we see in the beginning,
yes,
runs back to the compound and tells Moreau about it. And even though you could tell in his face he's scared to death, he runs after Moreau to, you know, stay with him. And the rest of them are going to hightail it out of there, you know. But
and he's the little loyal guy in South Park when they do the Dr. Moreau episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like one foot high, whatever. He's a very small individual.
Right.
But he's the Bling of this movie.
Right. You know? And that even kind of harkens back to the 96 version where they had, the original director was a Richard Stanley. And he did make, I think he's only made a couple, he's made some short films, but he's made two motion pictures. One's called Dust Devil and one's called Hardware. I don't know if you've ever seen either of those. I've seen them both. I mean, visually, they got a lot going on visually. And he was originally supposed to direct the 96 version. And I guess it just kind of fell apart, rapport with actors or something like that.
Yeah, sounds right.
And his script is online if anybody ever would like to read it. But he even hired, like, the world's smallest man, and that was, like, the mini-me of Marlon Brando. Yeah. I mean, the guy's, like, 12 inches tall.
Yeah.
And there's a part where, like, Marlon Brando's Moreau is playing the piano, and the little guy's on top of the piano with a little piano playing the piano.
I think they did that in South Park, didn't they?
That's what that's kind of like a little shout-out to.
Yeah.
But Island of Lost Souls, Moreau goes out there to meet him, all cocky, I'm going to go meet them.
And again, like he's still going to lay down the hand of
right. He still thinks he can do it.
Yeah.
You know, banging the gong and, you know, what is the law? And again, all he's got is that damn whip.
Yeah.
That's all he's got. And he thinks he's going to beat them all back. There's a mob. They've got flaming sticks.
Yes.
And, you know, they're ticked. They realize, oh, you know, man, we're not men, even though we've been indoctrinated in this religious, you know, fervor. You know, we are men and, you know, the laws.
You got to love how every creature, they show the...
Oh, the close-ups?
Yeah, just come right to that screen and stuff. It's just, it's...
That's the part you don't want to watch in the dark.
Yeah, scary.
I watched it with my 5-year-old daughter, and she didn't even like that part.
No.
But see, she's cool. She'll sit there and watch these movies with me, and I'll kind of explain things as we go. And, you know, we just share a love of that. And that's what I, you know, encourage you guys to do with your kids. Get them into these movies. Kids don't watch this stuff anymore.
No. My daughter loves this, too.
Yeah, and it's, well, loves the old look who her dad is, you know. Yeah. But, you know, even people my age, they don't really watch, even when I was growing up, they didn't watch these things. I was always the weird one. You know, I didn't like any of the newer movies too much. And I'm not trying to say, I'm not a hater. There's plenty of new movies that I like.
Right.
But they don't have the staying power. They don't stay with me and haunt my mind like some of these movies do.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to just, you know, impart that to her. I don't, you know, so many kids today, if they see something in black and white, forget it.
Oh, right.
You know, I'm not watching that. But, you know, she will watch that. You know, she's got her little copy of, you know, Bride of Dracula, or Bride of Frankenstein, excuse me.
That's awesome.
And we'll sit there and watch it on her DVD player. You know, I've got her own little copies. And, you know, she likes him on the iPad. Frankenstein's her favorite, because she even recognizes that he was not bad, that everyone treated him bad, and that's why he was bad. So even a 5-year-old can get that.
My daughter just watched Bela Lugosi, White Zombie.
White Zombie.
So, and she loved it.
Fantastic. I mean, he does a little hand thing. Yes. And so, and that's the thing. You know, share these movies with your kids. I'm not saying necessarily, you know, Island of Dr. Moreau, but because the end is a little intense.
Yeah,
you know, the you know,
well, they carry Dr. Moreau away
to the House of Pain.
To the House
the,
of Pain.
The whip did no good. The trying to get them to respond to what is the law, you know, they know law is no more. Loda attacks the ape man to try to protect Parker.
And Parker, I think, hears her screams and runs back after her.
You know, she has her little last words there, but, you know, she...
And that, yeah, that head to the side, I'm dead now thing.
She gives her life for him.
Right.
And...
which is very cool and makes her even more attractive.
Mm-hmm. And well, you know what else is kind of eerie about a lot of this film? The lack of music. You know, like when they're fighting... like when the animals are fighting, sometimes it's just complete silence.
Yeah.
Like you don't hear anything and you just have to focus on the image. There's no music to take you out of anything or even to enhance anything. But that was kind of the thing with a lot of these movies.
Yeah.
So they drag Moreau to the House of Pain, lay him on the vivisection table.
And they start crashing through the medicine cabinets, taking all the surgical tools and instruments.
And you don't see the camera pulls away.
Still don't see what they're doing.
You know they're just diving in there, and they're giving him a little taste of his own medicine.
Oh, yeah.
And then it pans out to the outside of the House of Pain, where you just hear the blood-curdling howls, and our main characters are, you know, the one dude lights up his pipe.
And you see the fire in the background just burning away. And, typical ending.
And off they go. You know, a lot of these films ended like that. Just, you know, not a big happy resolution. You know, a lot of these ended on a down note. And, you know, a lot of the Hammer movies the same way. Didn't always have that happy ending. It just kind of, you know, had that nihilistic ending there where, you know, the world is still in chaos here. Yeah. That what's going on that island is an absolute chaos.
Which is more of what you want in a horror movie. I mean,
right.
Not that you don't want a good ending, you know.
A good ending is good.
But, I mean, I guess them leaving is a good ending. They're not stuck on the island forever, so.
But, you know, it's just nature runs amok, and you cannot, you know. Just because Dr. Moreau had the knowledge and ability to do these things did not mean that he should have done these things.
Exactly.
So, we come to the end of the film, and I had seen it a few times. I recommended it to Dino, and I'm glad we finally got to check it out.
It was an awesome, awesome movie.
Right. And if you guys haven't seen it, I'm sure a lot of you out there have, but if there's any classic monster movie fans and you haven't taken the time to watch this one yet, seek it out on DVD or Blu-ray. It's on YouTube for free. Turner Classic Music
a lot
shows
of these movies.
Right. I mean,
that's a place to go for some of these
This film is worth the good presentation of a good Blu-ray system.
Exactly.
It's worth You know, it. YouTube's okay, but it's washed out and grainy.
Yeah.
It's worth it to see it in a good presentation. Not you don't have to have a great sound system for it,
no.
But just for the good picture, watch it in total darkness.
And oh yeah,
it'll be
it's
so
gotta be
great.
Totally dark when you watch this movie, because that's the TV just blends right into the darkness.
Yes,
and it's just it's a beautiful.
But I gotta say, it's I love all the classic monster movies. This is not there's no iconic classic monsters in this, but I qualify it as a monster movie. Like we said at the beginning, I mean, just imagine Dracula, Frankenstein, Freaks, this all in the space of 31 to 32, and there is just more to come.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Let's just say they don't
all
make
the way
them
up
like this.
Until 50, until they went into sci-fi.
Yes.
Pretty much, for the most part. But,
But this is it. Definitely one of my faves, and I think it was worthy of our first movie review.
Yes.
Kind of like our. This is the kind of stuff we want to do.
Yeah, so this is, you'll get a lot more of this. Although, I think, next week we're going to do the Hammer movies?
Did we say? We'll touch on a couple of Hammer movies. We talked about Horror of Dracula and The Brides of Dracula.
Yeah.
Horror of Dracula, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, one of the first forays into horror by Hammer. The first of a cycle of films that went for 6-7 pictures.
Yeah.
And what's cool about them is they usually where one ends, it picks up off of it. There is some continuity between them. Not so much between Horror of Dracula and Brides of Dracula, except in that there's mentions of Count Dracula and Peter Cushing again plays Van Helsing. But because there was actually a big gap between Horror of Dracula and Prince of Darkness. There was something like 7 years before Christopher Lee played Dracula again. And when we touch on Prince of Darkness, Christopher Lee doesn't even have any dialogue in that movie. It's just his presence that's in it, which is really cool.
Yeah, I haven't watched these two either, so this will be the first time me watching these movies.
I've been trying to get you to watch them for years.
No, I know.
They were some of my favorites. Grew up watching those.
The thing is, you've got to catch up on so many of the old black, because I like black and white. So
right.
There's so many of them. I mean, you just keep getting a new one. Whereas, I should have jumped and got into some of them.
I think you'll enjoy them once we get into them. I think you'll enjoy them. I'm a big fan. I'll almost always watch any Hammer movie.
Yeah.
There's good ones. There's bad ones. There's really bad ones. They did all kinds of movies. They did noir films. They did Robin Hood movies, dinosaur movies, Viking movies. They did it all. But the horror movies, they're gothic. They're misty.
Yeah.
The English countrysides.
I do love that.
Cool
love
effects.
That movies.
When we get into, the Frankenstein films, you'll see gore that you're not quite used to in the 50s movies. So that's kind of neat. But
cool.
With that, I hope you guys enjoyed.
Yeah.
Thank you for liking us. Thank you for checking out the site. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Yeah, and like our Facebook page. All you got to do is search the Little Monsters Movie Podcast, and it will come up. So, until next time,
next week,
we will do Hammer Horror.
Awesome.
Sounds awesome, man. Everybody, see ya.